everybody, welcome back to But Why the Podcast, and today we are covering a classic, Seinfeld. As always, I'm Kate, I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And Alex.
Hey, I'm back. It's been a while.
Yes, it has.
It's been a while.
I don't actually remember the last episode, but you know what? We're now here.
I think it was October, because it was Month of Alex.
Oh, yeah,
Alex
yeah.
Just on every episode.
Yeah, that's
fair. So last time I was here, I made it count.
Yes.
There we go.
But yeah, so Alex, why don't you tell everybody what you do, where you're from, and why you're here to talk about Seinfeld with us today?
Yeah, so I am from Portland, geographically. I am from the internet, more broadly speaking. Specifically, I used to do a pop culture podcast called What We Talk About, When We Talk About, and then I currently do Fright Day for genre and horror stuff, and I work on Game Boy's podcast doing video game reviews and discussions. But also in general, I just am a longtime fan of comedy. My early favorite movies were things like Tommy Boy and Bill and Ted and Wayne's World, and like that's kind of where I have been coming from for a long time. Is just like watching those kinds of movies. So yeah, when you guys said you were doing a Seinfeld episode, I was like, I've watched Seinfeld. I would probably be able to hold my own in this conversation. And now I'm here.
So I am not leading this episode. Matt is. So Matt, the floor is yours.
Yeah, the floor is mine. So we'll start off with obviously our introduction question. And this is for everybody of how much Seinfeld have you watched? And then I guess, what is your favorite moment or episode? Because I assume everybody's at least watched some Seinfeld. If not, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Cue Adrian. I see your face.
I guess we'll go with Adrian first then.
Yeah, I didn't watch a lot of Seinfeld growing up. I don't know. It feels like, to me, it feels like one of those things that like everyone like expects you to watch. But the episodes I watch, not that funny. I just don't think it's like overtly hilarious. I think there's like funnier shows out there. It just didn't catch me like when I was younger. Maybe if I go back and watch it now, maybe it'll make more sense. But I just didn't think it was like real funny when I was a kid. So I don't think I have like a favorite moment or anything. Yeah, I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
I know enough
about Seinfeld to like get like pop culture references and things and like the dumb trivia that like my English teacher in high school in 10th grade was like obsessed with Seinfeld and like always give us like Seinfeld facts. Maybe that's why I don't like Seinfeld, because like every day was like a different Seinfeld fact and I was like, who cares? Like,
to be fair, we should probably
and now you're a teacher. You're a teacher and you understand that he was just trying to bond with you all.
Yeah, she was like, yeah, then you know this thing with Superman. I was like, I don't care. I don't care. Can we read Catch in the Rye now, please?
I think, to be fair, which we'll probably talk to, I think Seinfeld was targeted. It was weird because it seemed to be targeted a higher demographic than probably your age at that time.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say to go off of Adrian. I watched this live with my dad when it was airing because this is my dad's favorite show. Like, Matt, you can attest, if you go to my parents' house, my dad will make at least 3 Seinfeld references over the course of your visit, sometimes more. And so growing up, it was we sat down on the couch, we watched it together. And that went all straight over my head. I didn't know what anything of it. I did not know what any of it was. I did not get it. I did not understand it. So I definitely get that, like, if you watch it when you're younger. But then in, I think it was like my first year of college, I watched it all. And I was like, oh yeah, no, I get this. This is good. This is good. A lot of it is dated and it could not be on TV now. Not a lot of it. There's some of it that couldn't. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's a lot of the commentary that happens with just shitty people doing shitty things. Mm-hmm. And it hits now. It hits. And so for me, my favorite, I don't know if it's my favorite, but I either don't lick envelopes because Seinfeld made me think that I could die from it. That's the one thing I took out of Seinfeld on my childhood, because Costanza was getting married and his wife was licking all the envelopes to send out all of his all of their wedding invitations.
Yeah.
And she ends up getting poisoned and dying from that. It also made me scared of the little silica powder. Like, actually, Seinfeld scarred me a little bit because I also got scared of the little silica powder things that they put in, okay. like the don't eat. Then it was that. And then I actually, not scared, but I learned a lot of stuff from there. I remember asking my mom what a sponge was when I was like 11. And my mom was like, no, we're not going to have this conversation. I didn't find out till I was like 23. So, because it's an outdated method, but.
Incredible. Yeah.
Yes. So I know a lot and I see a lot, but I think the moment that stuck with me the most is the one that makes sure that I do not lick envelopes anymore.
That is very
and fair. The one that reminds me of my dad, the Festivus episode, because my dad always says, air your grievances.
Yeah. Quality.
Alex, what do you have?
So I watched Seinfeld every now and again as a kid, but not all the time, like for primetime entertainment. I think my family gravitated more towards like The Simpsons, and so that is what occupied a lot of my time. But I did watch it every now and again. Mostly, though, I watched through all of it when it came to Hulu. I was just like, oh, it's here, and this feels like something that I want to know more about and that I want to like make sure that I've seen it. And what's funny is as I was watching through it, I realized like I'd seen a pretty widespread of episodes previously as far as what season they came from, but I hadn't seen everything. So it was nice to kind of to finish out that knowledge. I think one of my highlight episodes is the parking garage. just because it feels like such a good, weird, relatable thing to drag out into a whole episode. I'm just like, I don't know where we like they did a parking or a bottle episode in a parking lot. And I thought that was so clever.
That's amazing. But yes, Val.
I'm laughing as somebody who's been lost in an open parking lot and parking garage many times.
Right. It's like it's a thing that happens for sure.
Yes. I guess for me, obviously, I kind of was like you all kind of like I watched some of it live and stuff quite a bit. Not followed it because obviously I still was young, but I was kind of followed the Kate model of like once I like kind of got in like high school to undergrad, I basically, especially when it comes to syndication, I watched it like all the time because it came on like every day at a certain hour, yeah. Which we'll kind of talk about the syndication of the show. But no, so that's when I probably watched it the most. I don't know if I've actually seen every single episode. I remember a ton. But also, it wasn't until like I started doing these notes I realized how many episodes there were, and I always forget like when we do these like how much they actually put into TV versus like nowadays. Like I said, 7 seasons nowadays is like maybe 50 episodes versus what we'll get into like this in general. As far as my favorite moment episode, the one I always remember and I always like to talk about, which probably said, is basically the bad breakup with Elaine, where that guy gives a very unique, discreet, bad something that you do that you don't about the relationship, just so, like as he's breaking up with you. And he tells Elaine, you have a big head. And that's all he says and leaves. And Elaine comes obsessed with her having a big head. A bird actually nails and runs into her. And the guy beside her goes, oh my gosh, it was like, it was so big, the bird just couldn't move around you. And then she starts calling herself a walking candy apple over this.
I'm laughing because in college I realized that I was really Elaine and it kind of hurt. But it was bad.
But that's the one moment I always think of, and every time I see something, I'm like, oh, like it's like he couldn't move out of the way. The bird hit you. But anyways, so yes, there's a lot of stuff there. Adrian's looking at us like he has no idea what's going on, but...
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on. I'm more lost now than during Kate's horror episodes. I think that's kind of where I'm at.
That's remarkable. That's where I'm at.
It is remarkable, which we'll probably touch
but
on, too.
I think, just giving your conversations, all three of you were, like, I think I just haven't gone back and watched it as, like, an older person because it doesn't seem like any of you really watched it. Like when it came out and like really liked it, like it when it yeah. came out. Mm-hmm. I think it's just that.
I just didn't get it
when I was younger.
I think you need that. I think you need a little bit of jadedness, but I think you need to have had some situation that you can connect with. When you're a kid, everything's fine. You don't get lost in a parking garage because you're walking around with your parent. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But your parents losing their shit because they don't remember where they put the car.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the bigger thing too, like not that like, Seinfeld and Friends are the same, but I've never watched all of Friends because I had like a lot of the same reasons, but I've never had the inclination to go back and watch Friends. Seinfeld I have, I just haven't done it, but like, yeah, that like makes sense because I just don't think I can see like how Seinfeld could be something that I'd watch, whereas Friends mm-hmm. and like those kind of like popular shows that I only know about tendentially, like it, Seinfeld just seems better in that regard. But I definitely, given your experiences, that already makes me want to go back and watch it.
I loved Friends. I tried to watch it when it came back on Netflix. I hate it.
So
I hate it so much now. I could not do it.
I have not tried to rewatch Friends like you all. I know I've like obviously I got older. I tried to watch it. I like Friends. I do not worship Friends, and I definitely am not in the boat of like Friends is amazing.
Same.
I think
it's a fun time. It's solid background noise.
Yeah, it's definitely solid background noise, and I definitely can pay attention. But I'm definitely not like I will pay $100 million to see this.
When I paid attention, I realized how much I did not like it.
Yeah.
And it was like having my like teenhood shattered.
Yeah.
Which
I think part of that is also just the Friends, similar to Seinfeld, you realize these are not particularly good people, but Friends didn't spotlight that. Or like maybe they were just gaslighting all of us into thinking they were good people.
No, that's what it was. That's exactly what it was. They wanted you to think that they were good people. They praised them for being crappy people. Seinfeld was like, no, the world is crap. We're all crap. Let's go through crap together.
Because like in hindsight, Ross and Rachel deserved each other in that like neither of them were particularly good partners or people.
They were awful.
I'm sorry, Rachel, Ben, to get you off into like a friend's thing, but like that's like how
now
I compare
this. Derailed this whole
because like they're both like they both have like super fandoms, right? But I always felt like the Seinfeld super fandom people are a lot more tolerable, which makes me okay with being in this conversation. Whereas Friends, we do a Friends episode, I'm just gonna rip that stuff apart because that show is hot garbage. Those people suck.
My only defense would be that Joey is technically the person who is presented as the worst on Friends, but the only person I actually tolerate because he knows who he is.
Yeah, Joey's definitely the best part of the show. Like, the only part I like. So.
Okay, so now that we've derailed and we've done a whole entire Seinfeld episode.
Well,
podcast,
I can bring it back around, which is the important thing with Seinfeld is that you have to judge it not just like it's not fair to use modern comedy standards, but you have to judge it against the sitcom landscape of the 90s.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's huge. Like nobody else was really doing what Seinfeld was doing. If you go and look at what was on, it was like Family Matters, Full House.
Slander Full House.
Okay. So before we go through the whole episode here and get this, because Alex has a very good point, Duff, let's get back around and do some background information here.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. So Seinfeld ran from 1990 to 1998, or technically 1989. So a few things. So that's kind of why we're doing this episode. One, it was kind of the 30th anniversary, but it's technically not the 30th anniversary. And also, sadly, the passing of Jerry Stiller. We already had this on the calendar, and that happened like 2 weeks before. And
that makes me really sad.
Yeah. So technically it's 1989, so they kind of celebrated it last year, but it's really 1990 when we get into it. It was created by Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David. It was on NBC for its entire run, and NBC, like, loved this show. It actually ran for 9 seasons and had 180 episodes. And the amazing thing about this 180 episode is that 1989 debut of July 5th, 1989, is season one, and it only has part of season one, and it only has 5 episodes. So therefore, the pilot, which was technically supposed to be like a TV special, aired in 1989, and then they kind of get through and essentially they do this and doesn't really get picked up. They go through some stuff, they decide, and then they decide to come back and they pick it up for technically the rest of the season, and 4 other episodes air in the summer of June of 1990. That's why it's like, I know it's 1989, but technically it's 1990. I guess the other fun part is it was originally called for that one pilot episode, The Seinfeld Chronicles. Obviously,
bad name.
It was obviously renamed after it was picked up for the second season. It was also like kind of, they also saw what happened to apparently the Marshall Chronicles, which also died apparently like the early 1990. And they're like, oh.
I'd never heard of that before looking at our show notes.
Yeah, I didn't either, but apparently it was a sitcom that also picked up and failed in like 3 weeks, and so like we're going to clearly change our name so we're not referenced to this at all. Yeah. The other fun fact is apparently Elaine never actually is in this one 1989 pilot. So there was actually supposed to be somebody else, and it wasn't until they came back around and decided to go with Elaine. They were going to go with somebody else as the I guess the woman of the group. So speaking kind of the main cast of this, we obviously have Jerry Seinfeld playing Jerry Seinfeld. We have Jason Alexander playing George Costanza, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah. I'm going to end up mispronouncing that name, all this stuff. I forgot.
Just say Elaine.
I always say Elaine because I don't, her name is, I'm sorry. And obviously played Elaine, and then Michael Richard played Cosmo Kramer, which everybody kind of knows as Kramer. And I always had, and it wasn't until I went back here and I forgot his name was actually Cosmo.
Nice.
And then,
which also, can we talk Newman. About just that
I don't know his real name. I just know it was Newman and Kramer.
No, I was gonna say the one thing that actually looking at this, I've never considered, and I don't know why, but Seinfeld is interesting in that it's a sitcom about, you know, 20 somethings early 30s in New York, and they don't have the stereotypical like 5 to 6 people even gender split. They just went for like, yeah, whatever, it's a guy and three of his friends.
Yeah. Yes.
Which was kind
and they're also really normal.
Yes.
Yes. The weirdest thing is that Jerry's a comedian.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Which we'll kind of talk about in a little bit. Obviously, yes.
I take that back. Kramer exists.
Okay. obviously, we kind of mentioned Newman and other stuff. A few of the large recurring people, which was Lane Knight, played Newman, who actually does not have a first name in the show. His name is only called Newman.
Doesn't have a first name in real life either. He's just Newman. Jurassic Park, he's Newman Nedry. That's how it works. He's Newman.
obviously, we mentioned Jerry Stiller. He plays Frank Costanza. Estelle Harris plays Estelle Costanza. And then Barney Martin plays Morty Seinfeld. And then Liz Sheridan plays Helen Seinfeld. And then I had to mention Lynn Lesser playing Uncle Leo.
Uncle Leo!
So,
obviously, there's a lot of other guest characters, which I kind of... name because you know some of the big names that people probably forget actually starred in Seinfeld, but those are some of the big recurring ones we had and then whatnot. As far as rating wise for the show, it rated an 8.8 on IMDb. It's like rated the
it's funny, and I think that this is one of the things about the series is every time something gets brought up, another Seinfeld memory jogs into my head. Like, Uncle Leo got brought up, and it brought up the first time that my cousin waxed my eyebrows and my mom started making fun of me. So, like,
how does that tie to Uncle Leo?
Did his eyebrows burn off?
Oh, that's right. Something like that.
And then he comes back, and he just looks surprised. Okay, anyway, I'm just gonna mute my mic, because every time Matt mentions something, a new sign, it's like, I don't know, just...
You know, before this episode, Kate was like, I don't know what I'm going to contribute to this conversation. Now we're halfway through this episode. Kate had to shut up. as I was saying, so basically, as far as rating-wise for the show, it had an 8.8 on IMDb. It is the 48th or tied for 41st highest rated TV show ever. Basically, as I've said before in some of these other ratings, it's number 41 through 57 all have an 8.8. So how it gets to whether it's 41 or... 57 and they determined it was 48. I have no idea. It was actually a very successful as far as like award winning show. It won three Golden Globes, basically 1994 for Best Television Series. It was also nominated for Best Television Series from 1994 all the way through 1998. It won 10 Primetime Emmy Awards, 4 for Best Supporting Actor, Actress in a Comedy Series, 3 by Kramer, 1 by Elaine. I found this one really intriguing. Not only were all the side characters, like, you know, the main four nominated all the time, but they were nominated multiple times. And it was so bad. It was so crazy that, like, 1993 through 1996, all four, including basically Jerry, Elaine, George, and Kramer, were nominated or won basically best either supporting actor or actress or best, like, lead in a comedy.
And the crazy thing here is that Jason Alexander never won one, apparently.
Nope.
Because when I think about all of those actors, obviously they are not those characters, but Jason Alexander is arguably the most transformative and convincing performance if you look at him doing anything other than Seinfeld.
There, Costanza is also the best character on the show. Like, every time Costanza gets a subplot, it overshadows
his things. Answering machine still gets stuck in my head sometimes.
Yeah. Or the fact that him walking out of the bathroom with a shirt on takes, like, somehow is what I remember from that stupid the obsessive Russian gymnast episode. Like, Costanza is just great, and it is a crime that that man does not have any awards.
Which is actually funny we bring it up, Costanza, because in 1997 they still get 4 nominations, because for supporting, including Jerry Stiller gets a nomination for best supporting actor in a comedy series, but Seinfeld does not. So basically, I just always found that interesting with obviously the characters in general, just like how much, like, because we know shows that get, you know, like you have 1 or 2 maybe kind of do this, but the fact that, like I said, we had 3 years where basically 4 characters on one show were all nominated for best in their category.
Yeah, that's an incredibly strong cast.
Yeah. The other thing found was, which we kind of, looked up, was editing for a series and multi-camera production, and this, they actually were nominated, I think, Janet Ashikaga? Gaga? I'm sorry. Can somebody help me with this?
I think it's Ashikaga.
Ashikaga. Okay. She won 3 of these, like, editing for a series, multi-camera productions, and obviously with a few more nominations, along with also Skip Collector and then Robert Saunders. So, like, we're also nominated. So, like, it was actually, multiple people, but then obviously the thing, just how much of the camera work, which was kind of also something I was reading when we're doing this, is apparently the camera work in this is basically, like, transformed TV in general from multi-camera setups. The single camera setups, but it was kind of very confusing, and I don't know cameras that well to explain all of it. And everybody's looking at me.
I don't know a lot about multi-camera setup or how Seinfeld changed that. However, I will say that looking at late 80s sitcoms and television versus 90s, there is a style shift, and I know that TVs kind of pivot back and forth between single camera and multi-camera. But I don't know what really causes that other than someone does it. It's like, oh yeah, that's a fun way to make TV. And then everyone goes to that.
Yeah. Basically, the funny thing is from what I found looking at the camera work that they do is after this show, a lot of times they go back to the singular, they move to single camera, which is a lot of the shows that are filmed today where they don't have like this like set with all these camera angles per se. And like the last show at this point, which they're talking about was probably the Big Bang that kind of might be the last multi-camera show, not necessarily on, but like that's kind of
relevant. But popular, yeah.
Yeah. And if they're talking about like that one leaves, it might be the death of like multi-camera finally with all the other ones. Because it's easier, it's more efficient, you can be more creative with single camera stuff. But anyway, so they won a lot of film work for this, including this. They won 61 other awards for various shows, including like the People's Choice Award for Best TV Comedy Series. They won that for 96 through 99. The ASCAP Film and Music TV Awards. They were the top TV series from 1994 to 1999, and they were nominated for 185 other awards. So they were very successful.
Yeah, that's prolific. That's really impressive. Yeah. And especially considering, like, I mean, most shows, I feel like once you hit that 7th season, the quality becomes incredibly questionable, like whether or not you're going to maintain. So seeing that they had that illustrious of a career, it's like, oh yeah, you guys actually like pulled it off for more than the 7 seasons that I usually will give a show.
Yeah, which is also really, really kind of did an inverted of like the first 3 seasons. Obviously, the first season is literally only 5 episodes.
Well, yeah.
But obviously, they kind of pick it up and how it gets actually better with 8 throughout the seasons.
Yeah, and I remember seeing a thing that he talked about, like, one, wanting to go out on top, which is why it ended where it ended, and also he thought that 10 was too round of a number to end on. Like, he was like, everybody goes for 10, so we're just going to be done now.
Yep.
And there was an offer on the table for a season 10, and he just got weird about it and turned it down.
Yeah. So we've been talking all this time, so I guess we should give out a quick synopsis of the show, basically, for those of you who've been living under a rock. Essentially, it follows 4 friends who live in New York City doing mundane, everyday activities that's supposedly funny. It was actually often called a show about nothing. As we said, losing your car in a parking garage is like an entire episode. Parking in a handicap spot is an entire episode. Like,
that's such a good episode.
There's a lot of things. But the funny thing about this whole
There's a lot of car episodes, isn't there? Because there's also the one about whether or not you can back in or pull headfirst into a parallel parking spot.
Yep.
Yep.
And again, a whole episode.
And then there's one where they're like, you know, when you brush in your nose when in the car, but you're not picking your nose. It's a lot of very mundane activities that go on. The funny thing, it was actually originally stated and pitched, however, that they basically want to follow the comedian Jerry Seinfeld, because essentially he plays himself and as a comedian, and basically as a way for him to get his material for his stand-ups. So basically through everyday life, which we see a lot of comedians have talked about this, a lot of their stand-up routines and a lot of comedians get through their everyday life. And so essentially this was a show about how a comedian gets his material.
Which makes sense. I've never thought about it like that, but that makes total sense because every piece, like, I feel like Seinfeld, the way it exists and the way the storytelling is done around such mundane things, like, these are the conversations that we have in our friends. Matt has told the story of how I was very adamant that I thought we parked in front of a Dillard's when it was really a JCPenney's many a times to friends because it's funny. And I think that that's why it hits now being older, because there's something that is funny in the mundane because it's not unreachable. It's the same reason we love The Office and Parks and Rec. They take these really boring things, but because we can identify with the boring thing, it makes it funny and not boring.
Mm-hmm.
Also Serenity Now. I just want to start talking about episodes because so many things are coming back now.
About all I have for the background information and kind of synopsis. Does anybody have anything else on that one before we get into But Why Those?
No.
Adrian, are you all caught up?
All caught up. I mean, I know there's like a bunch of episodes and things like that, and it ran for like a long time. But like looking at the years, this makes more sense because we were like, my dad watched Seinfeld, and if he's watching it, like, you know, in the later seasons, I'm still super young, so I understand. Stuff is clicking, making a lot more sense on why I didn't watch it when it was serialized.
Oh yeah, but now to get into the But Why Those, and as Matt does with all of his episodes that he leads, we're going to start off with successful show, aka franchise or whatever. basically, it lasted 9 seasons, 180 episodes, of nominated and won many awards, as I already went through. From 1993 to 1998, it was in the top 3 highest watched shows, basically, and so. Basically, every year it was top 3 of most watched shows from those 5-year peak points, which is pretty good. I mean, I know there's been others, but still, for what it was. It's ranked high on pretty much any list you can probably ever look at. I think Ranker, which we've used before, has a third best sitcom. I think only trailing Friends and The Office, but we already discussed Friends sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So we will not be doing a Friends episode.
We will eventually. I think the final thing I'm interested in, obviously this is a little dated, but I just did 2013, the Writers Guild of America voted it the second best written TV show of all time.
What did they vote number one?
The Sopranos.
Okay.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Although that's one of those ones where like it feels like we need categories because best written sitcom versus best written drama, like those are two just completely different writing styles.
Yep.
Yeah, but it was interesting to see like that. Which also we might touch on the Sopranos here in a second. As of 2017, the show has made over $4 billion just from syndication.
I believe
it! You know how they did it? Because they sped the episodes up to cram in more ads. That's an actual thing that they were caught doing.
Oh my god, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But also, I will say, I believe that they made $4 billion because I remember my dad rushing home from... I think we were at my grandma's and we rushed home so my dad could watch the finale. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I just remembered this is the end of Seinfeld. This is the end of Seinfeld. No, my dad was still on the couch every day at the same time watching the syndicated Seinfeld. How many times he's seen the episodes.
Have you seen the photos of Times Square when they did the finale? They literally showed it in Times Square.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, this was, like, to give you the scale of the show, it was that important that they aired it in Times Square.
It was also that important to where, you know, these are filmed usually before a live audience. They actually did not film it before necessarily a live audience. They didn't film it for, like, selected people, and you had to sign not necessarily a NDA, but basically the 90s equivalent to an NDA, a vow of silence, if you were going to be in the audience. I mean, when this is actually being filmed and made. So
that's cool.
That's about how large. And basically, they didn't tell, like, anybody have anything and whatnot else. It was a huge ordeal.
Also, I convinced my dad to take over Hulu payments when he realized all of Seinfeld was on Hulu. That's why I have my parents' Hulu, because he really wanted to watch Hulu, but he didn't think it made sense for us to have two accounts.
Nice.
But yeah. As far as the syndication we brought up and stuff, Jerry Seinfeld has made over $400 million alone just from syndication. Obviously, that does include what all the other cast is making, but yeah. And then obviously, I believe it's HBO Max that is scooping up all of these shows right now.
Yeah.
That will basically highlight, I believe it's Friends, The Big Bang, Two and a Half Men, Seinfeld will all be launching, I believe, on these platforms. And they paid a lot of money for each of these, like in the 100 millions range.
I will tell my dad that HBO Max is getting Seinfeld, and then I will let everybody know if he then decides to go buy that service.
Because I believe it was bought from Viacom. And I know they could also be in syndication for TV Land and other stuff now. Moving there.
Mm.
As we kind of mentioned before, like, because I wanted to mention the Writers Guild thing. Obviously, next but why, that would be the writing. The show is renowned for its writing of comedy. It obviously changed a lot of the way comedy is sitcoms are written. And I didn't realize this too. It makes sense when I start thinking about it, doing this. But apparently most sitcoms up to this point, they were written basically you have an A story, a B story, and then you have the surrounding material essentially is called a runner or a joke that kind of is done throughout the whole episode. And then mm-hmm. you're kind of left with like a moral lesson, whatever, and you're done. It's still very common. We still see it in a lot of episodes in general. And I'm sure there's some episodes in Seinfeld that is. But Seinfeld essentially did it a little different, which was Kate mentioned with like some of George's subplots of each character mm-hmm. had their own separate storyline, and it technically all converged into basically a final mm-hmm. moment, creating this larger outlier, you know, part or certain story with all that was bigger than all the parts, but they all kind of matched together, which we see all the time where George starts, you know, in a car broken down or trying to do a date, and Elaine's over here doing something, and Jerry's at his apartment doing nothing. At the end, they always end up in the same place together.
Mm-hmm. And was it Seinfeld who they had the philosophy of no one ever learns?
Yes.
Yep.
I think, yeah, and that was their thing, was yep. there is no stinger wrap-up. It's no one ever learns.
Nope.
Yeah.
So obviously...
I was gonna say my favorite episode that I remember where they do the nice wraparound of connecting the two was the Frogger episode where Costanza's trying to keep his high score and Jerry has to like take a TV like across the like lanes of traffic. And it's one of those things where these plots are completely separate from each other. These characters are doing their own things, and then there's a moment of, oh no, this is all the same.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah. Obviously, we mentioned all the time, taking mundane, everyday activities and making them funny and putting this, obviously, that differed from a lot of other shows that kind of you had to have some type of level of action or some type of interaction and stuff for engaged or climax and everything else. It focused on the little details of life, such as, like I said, funny, I wrote this in the notes, of losing your car in a parking lot, you know? Basically... There's like other random ones of like licking envelopes and just little details. And they did such a good job of trying to show basically anxiety, different types of, not necessarily anxiety you have, but like anxieties and type stressors of life, especially for living in New York City without having to go over the top of like, you know, like, oh my gosh, I need to go crazy. It's just like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. I lost my car. I'm having a breakdown right now.
I mean, the first episode opens with a conversation of how many buttons do you undo on a button down shirt? And that's it. And it's just them debating like, oh yeah, that second button, that's kind of the hard one, isn't it? And it's like, that's how mundane this show gets.
But it is something that happens in everyday life. Everybody has gone out and thought, should I leave the one button? Do I want to go two button today? What do I do?
I think my favorite smallest moment that is just really hilarious is the eating of the Snickers with the fork and knife.
Yep.
Like, it's so small, and it's so stupid, and it shouldn't be hilarious, but it's hilarious, and it keeps coming up.
Well, I mean, they do a whole, I mean, we talk about mundane and do stuff like, somebody, you let somebody pass. They didn't give me a wave. Like, you're supposed to do a courtesy wave to somebody when you let them in. How dare you? Like, is this rude? Is this not rude? Like, are you supposed to wave? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, like I said, and then the Frogger getting stuff, like, you know, they do live in New York City. Elaine technically doesn't even have a car. Throughout the show, so it's just kind of like having to maneuver through a city and doing everything of like, oh, I have to get from point A to point B. I'm relying on so many different factors and mm-hmm. everything else. And so yeah. it's just been, they, like I said, they did it very well, what they do. Also, the cool thing is basically all these characters are modeled off basically real people, and a lot of, especially from like Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld's life, especially Larry David.
Yeah.
I know Seinfeld is kind of the name of the show and the character, but Larry David is actually a very important person in all of this show and everything that happens.
I feel like the episode that everybody in film Twitter should watch is the English Patient episode, and that's actually my favorite Elaine episode, because she just keeps getting roasted for not wanting to put the energy and appreciate the English Patient, which had come out, and she just is, like, adamant that no, and it just makes me feel like just film Twitter conversations. I'm like, all mm-hmm. y'all need to watch the English Patient, because you can see how stupid you sound right now.
Yeah.
It's definitely, like I said, the writing overall, there's reasons why people renown this for the writing and comedy is so popular. Which mm-hmm. kind of also gets into basically the characters. We've already mentioned they're all nominated for awards. We all love them. We have all their moments. We kind of touched on a little bit of, this is kind of the first time we get really, especially a popular show, where the characters are not really actually good people. They're actually mm-hmm. kind of bad people. They aren't like the levels we get to like the Michael Scotts of the world.
It's not It's Always Sunny, but it lays the groundwork for it. Yeah. It's a marked yeah. departure from that style of television that dominated from the 50s to the
80s. Yes. Yeah. This is a full house.
I think you have, on the hierarchy of this is a shitty person, you have like, you have Seinfeld, The Office, Always Sunny, Archer.
Where does the league fit in there?
Yeah, I was like, where does the lead? Because they're not...
Like, right under Always Sunny.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not as bad as Always Sunny, like, but they're actually pretty
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, they're right under Always Sunny. And then The League is also a show that literally takes this entire premise and does the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Only it has fantasy football. I miss The League. That's such a good show.
Yeah. But no, like I said, it's one of those... And it's funny because, like, obviously, as you get older, you realize this and you see it, but it's also nice because they're not good... And obviously this really connects with a lot of people when you see yourself, because obviously at the end of the day, everybody probably not as a good human being as they think they are, especially if you were filmed or did everything you do. But it does a nice thing of seeing all this. And it's funny because I brought up The Sopranos, and a lot of people, when they go, because they talk about apparently with these shows, because remember in the late 90s, going in the early 2000s and whatnot, we start getting like The Office, and then all of a sudden some of these other shows that come up, it's kind of like the late 90s establishes, not necessarily in comic book, the age of anti-heroes, because The Sopranos comes along in late 90s as well, and everything mm-hmm. else, and then even Friends, if we want to go through there. But people always seem to credit The Sopranos, especially because you're like, oh, there's a, you know, basically what he was, and, you know, Tony Soprano was not a good person, and so people are like, oh yeah, that's where we get, like, no, it technically goes all the way back to Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld is probably kind of, you want to say, in, I guess, 2020 days of, he's has a lot of toxic things about him, but in general, he's probably a normal person that doesn't care about a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Alex touched on a little bit, but Larry David went through the whole motto: no hugging, no learning, no character ends an episode with a hug nor a lesson learned. So they didn't learn. They didn't want him to learn. They didn't want him to grow. And in many cases, they don't even feel bad for whatever happened to whatever the people that were involved in.
Again, the envelope episode. The way Costanza is like happy that his fiance is dead is mm-hmm. one of the coldest and most awful things that anybody has done in television.
From that, and I remember him talking to the doctor being like, so this is what killed her, right? Like, just trying to get like that.
To make sure that it wasn't him. He just wanted everybody to say that he didn't kill her.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, oh man, like what a harsh, horrible end.
Well, I mean, we talk about, because especially when we get to like, obviously they end up dating, there's a lot of relationship stuff, like any 90s sitcom, and like, Jerry breaks up people for some of the dumbest dating. Elaine basically leaves people like for reasons like, oh, he's ugly now, I can't date him.
Or... Elaine is not good. And I realized that my dating habits in college were like Elaine. It was like, oh, no, I'm done now. Bye.
Yeah. yeah. But no, they don't.
And then
work.
There's the whole Spongeworthy
yes.
arc.
Yes.
Like I said, none of these characters learn. Larry David did not want them to learn. He did not want them to be good characters. He did not want him to do anything, and fit. He didn't want him to end in hugs. He didn't want him to have character development.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. Like I said, it was kind of how they went did, and it makes it great. Especially like I said, it's weird when you watch it and they have the comic moment, but when you do kind of look back and or start watching it as you get later and you start, like, I guess, putting perspective or doing, you know, episodes like this, you realize, like, man, they did a lot of, like, messed up stuff. Mm-hmm. Even if it wasn't, like, super over the top, but it was just, like I said, we parked in a handicap spot. And it's like, the hell with that handicap lady. To kind of break down some of these characters, especially the main four, we start with Jerry Seinfeld, obviously. Basically, he's described as kind of like the everyman, is what I found from this personality type. He's very basic, and people identify him. He's able to, like, observe the chaos, but he's very not always a part of it. He's obviously kind of like the center, but not really, like, involved with everything. He's kind of not really the most successful person, but he is the only person who can take a job the whole time. So it's kind of like he is. Everybody, we go through, like, jobs, losing jobs and whatnot else.
Mm-hmm. Costanza wants to keep progressing in his job. He's just too awkward to actually know how to do it. That man is riddled with anxiety and gets very loud instead of crying.
Yeah. I mean, Elaine goes through three different jobs. Kramer, we still don't know what he's doing to this day.
Kramer just mooches off of everybody. He has nothing. I guess
he's like a con artist.
Movie phone, right? He was movie phone at one point. So
he
that's
was.
One thing.
He's essentially Taco from the League. That's all he is.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%.
The League is just Seinfeld.
With kids and families.
Yeah. They don't have
but it's there. Just Seinfeld.
Obviously, the funny thing is they did the entire episode on how Jerry's entire life, he breaks even. Like, Elaine throws his $20 out the window, and he found out the dry cleaners accidentally left $20 in his pocket, so he broke even. So he doesn't have bad luck, but he doesn't have good luck, so he's just consistent in everything. But he's also, like I said, he goes through a lot of women. He failed relationships. He breaks up for dumb reasons. You know, like, she used my toothbrush and I break up type stuff. Like, there's a lot of, like, dumb things. He does some, like, said.
They all break up for weird reasons.
Well,
like,
I know,
none
but
of these people have healthy dating lives.
He has very weird standards, very, like, things of, like, I don't like the color you're wearing. I don't like you. You know, they just don't. And it's something that we experience in every day and we see, but obviously you're, like, when you watch it, you're like, oh, you're kind of not a nice person. We move on to George, who essentially is by far the worst character when we go through the actual thing of he's basically a compulsive liar, self-loathing, neurotic. He clearly has parents' issues. He's dominated, as we see, between Jerry Stiller playing Frank Costanza and obviously Stella. He's also probably the most compelling character.
Stella!
Yeah, which, as Kate said, like, how much Jason Alexander does for this character and does everything, he's definitely, like, one of the best, why people like him, but it's weird he never won anything. He's obviously just, like, a short... I said, he's obviously... I put he's always down on his quote-unquote luck, because he really wasn't, but, you know, he's basically a very short, little stocky guy that's balding. He doesn't have anything going for him in his life. He has no, like I said, spine or per se, if he said it was his parents coming in. But the funny thing is, what we noticed throughout the thing is, essentially his whole goal was basically to get with women, relationship, but only to a certain point. And he always fails. Mm-hmm. You can't ever figure out why. And I found the nicest thing I found from doing this is he's a 90s version guy for what we call the nice guy. So basically, he does good deeds or says he does good deeds, but it's all motivated to, can I sleep with this person?
Yeah, it's real bad. It's real bad.
Yeah, and then obviously, he's definitely very self-centered and stuff. I didn't say this episode first favorite one, but I do remember this one. I had it right down. The one episode, he's at one of his girlfriend's son's birthday party, and a kitchen fire breaks out, and he literally runs out, knocking over the children and the old ladies to save himself.
It's so good! I love it so much.
It's a really good Costanza moment.
Oh no, guys, what if I'm not Elaine? What if I'm Costanza?
That's bad. But I mean, like, he liked to be a marine biologist. That's another thing. Like, he's a marine biologist. Like, there's a reason that's the thing.
Art Vandelay.
Like, he does a lot of very compulsive lying. He does a lot of stuff. And probably, like I said, the good thing about a lot of the show, too, and, like, the good thing is, because, like, with the Larry David situation and whether it's no growth enough, they pay for a lot of these mistakes in some way or form.
Yeah.
Which is what makes the no learning so much funnier.
Yeah.
That there is a consequence, but they're just like, whatever.
Yeah. It's kind of like we talked about, because obviously I model these notes kind of Archer in a sense of, like, these characters were never designed to be good. Nobody's saying we need to celebrate these kind of characters, do whatever, even when we kind of find hilarious and everything. But it's not like they don't go unpunished. I mean, they do get punished in ways. Obviously, they get away with some
stuff.
The audience
is very clearly knows that these people are horrible.
Yeah. And then obviously they have Kramer, who's the wild one. He's out there. The funny thing doing this, he might actually be the best human person character out of everybody.
Yeah.
Because he genuinely tried to help strangers. He even tries to get like Elaine and all them. They're like, hey, we have to care about these people. How about we help them? The problem is he's obviously quirky and very strange and ends up doing some weird
and stuff. And a con man. And is living off of other people's
money. Well, that's what I'm saying. He always ends up in these weird situations and they often happen time to be illegal. But he's also like extremely honest with apparently people about things. He just doesn't mind in general. Like he tells that lady, because they get things like, oh my gosh, you need a nose job. It looks awful. And then she like freaks out. I think that was one of George's girlfriends or thing.
Probably.
Yeah. And it was, but he's.
He's also the worst human in reality. Like the actor.
Oh,
which is a really interesting dynamic.
Well, as we can go into the personal lives that they all have at this point outside of like probably, I don't know what Jason and Ben have done, but I mean, obviously Dewey has been great for everything, but obviously between Seinfeld and Michael Richards, yeah.
Jason Alexander played the king in Roger and Hammerstein's Cinderella with Brandy, and that's all that matters.
But yeah. And so, obviously, I only said three of the characters because I do want to kind of transition into kind of like Seinfeld's influence on TV. And I kind of want to, doing so, I kind of want to talk about Elaine herself and kind of everything that Elaine kind of set up in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, because Elaine influenced basically as a female character and basically a popular show and everything. Obviously, for those who don't know, she was kind of the woman in the group. She can be very superficial and neurotic. She was kind of like Jerry, a serial dater. She wasn't really good with people either. She usually ended up doing self.
She's awful with people.
Yeah.
She pissed off almost everybody she ever met.
Yeah. She obviously blew up a lot of her relationships. The funny thing, like I said, somebody was so good, he ended up getting in an accident. He basically messed up his face. And she's like, he's ugly now. I have to leave him no matter how good he is. She was very selective with her dating, like who she was looking for and everything else. She could be very mean. And as we said, but as far as like obviously she's mess, but as far as like obviously like Kate go kind of because her because I know you love Elaine sense of like she wasn't she could say she they showed her as normal per se and mm-hmm. and I know it sounds weird to say but like she was normal for especially a woman you know lead and she was kind of a mess and flawed and everything else because before this we kind of get like the traditional women leads we have like Murphy Brown I think is the big one that comes up before this of. Basically, that whole show is, I am strong woman. I do my career and do great. I find my calling mm-hmm. and stuff. And it's like, hits you over the head with a lot of stuff. And I know there's something that Kate and I know Kate's really stressed on of what we've had even in the past few years of how we're getting portrayed of women characters and whatnot. And obviously, the other thing that we've always said for years of, you know, their development revolves around relationships and love and that kind of puts them forward. Where Elaine does a lot of relationship stories. But definitely none of them define her, especially even if they do define her in a good way at all. She also had plenty of other stuff outside of just her relationships. Basically, she wasn't perfect. She was pretty much kind of a bad person. Also, when you go break down to a little bit deeper of they gave her a lot of quote-unquote male personality traits, and even the wardrobe she wore were very, like, I guess they call it conservative. Like, she wore, like, blazers and other stuff, and...
She wore suits, yeah, like, suits. Just straight up.
Yeah.
She wore oversized suits all the time, yeah. And it was so good. I remember that growing up.
Yeah, but so kind of some of those traits about the angry, loud, demanding, and everything else, as Kate said, in your face and whatnot. She got angry mm-hmm. all the time. And obviously, before Kate, the last thing, essentially, kind of a different sense, but we don't get Leslie Knope without Elaine, you know, basically, a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's interesting because so many, I think, like you were saying, female leads on sitcoms were often, you know, the mother in the house or the girlfriend or relegated to some kind of either romantic or matronly role. And this was, I think, one of the first big ones we got where it was like, nope, we're going to write her basically the same way that we write Jerry. Like, she just does what she wants, gets what she wants, like, doesn't think about consequences. And it breaks so far from tradition. And again, that goes back to the thing of this show breaking away from what we'd been doing for the last 30 years on television. But yeah, I think that makes her a really interesting character. And I'm now like actively comparing her to the women on Friends. And I'm like, she is objectively
she's better than all of them.
Right. I'm like, she's not a great person, but I do like her more, I think.
Well, she's better written, in my opinion. So, what happens? So, like, when you see this and like bringing up Murphy Brown, like the other categories, you just get the cold career woman. She only wants a career. She doesn't care about love. She doesn't care about any of these things. And when Elaine comes in there, Elaine is a mess in the same way everybody is a mess, mm-hmm. because she's thinking about everything. It's not I can have it all. It's just, oh, I'm moving through life. And I only got one sponge left. Who am I going to use this sponge on? And if you don't know what a sponge is, it's a form of contraception. And essentially, like, her having that type of conversation is something that you would have. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that they give her the ability to have sex, to have relationships, and never vilify her for it. Because a lot of the times, a character like Elaine would appear in a sitcom, but she's the bad person trying to... Mm-hmm. corrupt the good person. Whereas as much as Elaine is angry and loud, she's no more angry and loud than the guys are.
Yeah.
And that's something that's also really important too, because a lot of the times when sitcoms, and even do it now, when a woman is angry, when a woman is loud, a lot of the times they're doing it to make her a nagger. A lot of the times they're doing it to A lot of times they're doing it to undercut her position in some way. But mm-hmm. the thing is like, she's a girl in a group of guy friends. And it's like, no, this is just how you have to talk to them. But then she takes that outside of her friend group and alienates mm-hmm. anybody she comes into contact with. And Elaine doesn't have a lot of female friends. So I see myself a lot in Elaine. And a lot of it, and I don't want to say like, it's so actually, to take it a step further, you don't get the women of Sex and the City without Elaine, because mm-hmm. all of those women in that show and in that series, they are women who are just written like people. And I think especially because a lot of the heads of these sitcoms and things, even the ones that were made focused on women, they were dudes writing them. So instead of mm-hmm. being like ultra cautious on how you have to write a woman, Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld were just like, these are literally how the women in my life act. So Elaine is going to be this way now too.
Well, and I think a really telling thing about how they wrote her is the way that they handle her in the contest, which is the famous episode where they all agree to just not masturbate, but they never actually say the word the entire episode.
Yes.
And the most that you get with her gender or anything getting brought into it is they're like, well, no, this is going to be easier for you, so you pay more money. And that's it. That's all we get, is that they make her pay $150 instead of $100.
Yep. It's one of those things where, like, even watching it back with whatever year we watched it at, even watching it back from, like, we're in this time now and this is happening, Elaine's character still holds up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's also a character that, like, you end up with, Dollface and Two Broke Girls and all of these shows that come out that are focused on women being pretty messed up. Fleabag, all of these mm-hmm. shows that are showing women like this for the first time. Well, no, Elaine was the blueprint for that. The ability to be messed up and it's okay, that was already there. And I think that it's ultimately just something that I really like, because I don't like idealized things mm-hmm. a lot, especially when it comes to showing women in series, because I'm the farthest from any of the female stereotypes other than being a loud brown woman. And so it's just really nice to see that type of thing, because I functioned in mostly male groups my entire mm-hmm. life. And so watching Elaine back, it didn't seem weird. It seemed normal.
Yeah. And that's huge. I think honestly, if I'm going to evaluate the main cast of the show, my two favorite characters are Elaine and George, and Jerry and Kramer, like, they're fine, but if I had a show that was just about Elaine and George, I'd be happy with it.
Yep. Oh, and Elaine is also brutal to George. Like, Elaine is probably the meanest one to George out of the entire thing, and it's so good. It's so good.
Oh, yeah, she is definitely something. And the funny thing, we're talking about all this and bad stuff, and obviously not just Elaine, but all the characters, we're talking, like, oh, they're kind of bad people, but as you said, like, I didn't want to say the word normal, kind of like another Supreme series, because, like, it's just kind of how people act. And some of it is kind of mean, comes off rude. But like I said, it's not like anything over the top. Even though some of the stuff Elaine does to George is pretty bad. I mean, she throws his wig out the window and says, "You are bald." Like,
that's a brutal episode.
It was so good, though. Everybody needs a friend in their life like that, though, because that wig was bad.
It was very bad.
But no, like I said, it Elaine's a great character, and I probably do have to agree with, like, it's funny because Jerry is the most, like, the main character of all this, but it does find it interesting, which is kind of like a way I described him of, like, all these other characters are in such chaos, and they're going through so much stuff, and they do so much more crazy things that, like, Jerry's character, while good or whatever, it just does not, it, like, when you want to say what you want to do, it's Lane and George are definitely way up there when it comes to, like, the compelling and interesting characters. So, yeah. Which obviously, I guess, moving on from there, and I kind of talk about, I mentioned, kind of ended with, like, the lesbian note. We mentioned Sex and the City, you know, maybe a few other characters. I like that Kate broke up, or brought up two broke girls, because that stuff just, like, I've tried it. I don't get it.
I don't like it. I don't either. It's weird. I don't get it. Well, because in those shows, I guess, I don't know. It was the 90s, whatever. I just feel like a lot of the times when I watch these shows that are geared towards showing women, like, normal and being messes, I feel like they focus so much on trying to break a stereotype that it feels like a new stereotype.
Yeah, they created a new one.
It just feels fake. So when I watch that as somebody who is very much not as in the feminine space as, like, one would assume, and I know that that's a very weird thing to say, but it's just, like, the archetypes I say on TV don't describe me.
Mm-hmm.
Elaine was just normal. Like, it doesn't feel like anybody's ever trying. It's hell! The episode where she's obsessed with cleavage! I've done that! It's so, like, it's such a good episode, and none of it feels like it's degrading to her because she's a woman. If anything, she has an advantage in these group of stupid, stupid men because she's a woman. And that's something that is very apparent.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when she tried to smoke cigars.
Yes.
Another good episode.
So kind of moving forward. So now we're going to probably bring Adrian back in the episode, because this is where Adrian's going to know now that he's gotten all older. Obviously, these shows have kind of inspired a lot of stuff of shows that were We Like Bad People, of obviously The Office, Always Sunny, Arrested Development, Curb Your Enthusiasm, even Broad City to a sense. I don't like Broad City from what I watched.
I like Broad City.
But I do.
Broad City's the closest to Elaine. That I will say.
Oh, gosh. What, because they're in New York?
So much. No, because they're just messes, oh, but in a normal way.
Yeah, I don't know about a normal way for that one. That might be a little over top there. But anyways, so outside of that, which, by the way, has anybody seen Curb Your Enthusiasm or like it?
Yes,
I've watched
the
first season and I had a good time with it, but I didn't have access to the rest of it.
So I've been like Alex, where I've watched some episodes and I've enjoyed what I've watched, but I've never, like, watched it or anything close to, like, what I've watched with Seinfeld or any of these other shows. For some reason, I think obviously because it didn't come on to HBO or something for a long time.
Yeah.
Probably why I just never got it. And I've never gone back to try to rewatch it. But from what I've seen of it, pretty good. And obviously this is kind of almost like the quote-unquote sequel to Seinfeld at this point, because it's Larry David's.
Well, it's Larry David, yeah, right.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, basically, literally, they jumped from Seinfeld. He jumped, basically, springshots himself into Curb Your Enthusiasm and whatnot else. But I know that's another renowned show. Obviously, as I said, catchphrases, memes and pop culture and what Adrian knows, because and what we all do know, and what a lot of stuff that you may not even know where it even comes from. Mm-hmm. Probably Seinfeld has a staying power to be relevant through all this because of everything that we've seen throughout all these years. Yada 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 is basically a huge one where people realize not came from Seinfeld. Spongeworthy, the double dipper, essentially, obviously.
That one blew my mind when I realized it was a Seinfeld term.
The double dipper is so good. It's an entire episode about somebody double dipping. It's so, so good.
What's funny is, if I remember right, so started as a joke on a sitcom, and I want to say I saw that somebody actually did a study on, like, germ transfer through double dipping to determine whether or not it was unsanitary.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when you have things like that of, like, we made a stupid joke and then dragged it out into a whole episode, and then someone was like, I'm going to study this? That's insane.
Well, like, when my boss at work gets mad, she says Serenity Now. My dad, growing up, my dad would say that. Not ironically, not trying to be funny, but genuinely trying to calm himself.
The fact that people still...
Also... Oh, go ahead.
Okay, the fact that people still go, he's a marine biologist, and people for the day go, why would we say that? And it's literally just because it came from an episode.
Also, my dad is very obsessed with pointing out when it's Festivus, which is Festivus is December 23rd, and it is a great holiday where we all air our grievances.
Yes.
But do you do the feats of strength?
Yes.
I have no strength.
Which obviously came from apparently somebody, I think it was either where your neighbor used to do this in their family holiday. But yes, Festivus came basically the show.
Festivus for the rest of us.
Basically, literally, the show made a whole new holiday of how important it was. They have...
Well, because atheists use it a lot now.
Yes, they
like
do.
It's something that comes up a lot with atheists because it like the literally like, the thing is Festivus for the rest of us, like the people who don't celebrate Christmas or don't believe in that stuff, and so it actually got adopted by a lot of atheists, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And then obviously we have Puffy shirt, but I don't want to be a pirate, which is great, and I love that line.
Every time there's a Puffy shirt in the game, I always think of Seinfeld.
Don't want to be a pirate.
My character has a Puffy shirt in Animal Crossing because I had
to. But you have very tight black pants to go with it.
I do, actually.
Excellent.
Hello, Newman. Obviously, we mentioned I was in a pool shrinkage. They did a whole entire episode of like what happens when guys are in a pool or when you're cold. Bubble Boy before the movie came out was a thing.
Yep.
Mm.
And then obviously I can keep on going. These are just some of the like eight I listed. We could probably do this forever.
My mom still says, "Who doesn't want to wear the ribbon?"
The funny thing
all
is,
the time.
Get Out apparently was another one where people yelling because Jerry always did Get Out. Adrian, what do you know from what stuff? Obviously, you may not watch the show, but just obviously you've heard from like over the years.
Definitely like the Hello Newman stuff. I know about shrinkage, yada yada yada, of course. I don't know. I think I'd have to like hear them to like know them, but all of these I know by reference pretty much. Except for Double Dipper. I didn't know that came from Seinfeld. That's actually kind of cool.
Also I'm looking at a list now. Re-Gifter is another one.
Oh yeah. And it's funny because we think about all this stuff and we're just like, oh, yeah, we've said it before, jokes and whatnot. We've seen it even in other movies, other shows, but it all apparently started like here doing some.
Well, even just saying Newman, like even just saying a singular name with that much hatred. Thank you, Elaine. It's just something that I think gets done in other shows all the time, especially sitcoms.
Yeah,
but it comes
Josh,
from here.
Megan.
Yes. Yes, exactly. The dots are connecting.
Obviously, it's funny because Jerry Seinfeld wrote a book in 1993, which is obviously kind of with the Seinfeld years and whatnot, called Sign Language. And so it's kind of like on the title. And so basically all these phrases are referred to as sign language and stuff. And it's actually a New York Times bestseller book, apparently. Never read it. I knew it kind of existed, but I did not realize the lexicon of Seinfeld apparently existed.
I knew a guy who had a copy of it that he got out of a free pile, I think, and he refused to part with it because I wanted it.
Three things. One, Dingo ate your baby.
Yes.
That's Seinfeld.
I didn't have enough space on the notes to write that one, to be fair, because that was a great
also,
one.
Man hands.
Man hands.
Yeah.
But the best one is a close talker.
Man hands, yeah.
Close talker's great.
Somebody being a close talker, because that's a very real problem.
It is. The weird things, like I said, we're laughing at these same things, but these are generally real problems and stuff we see. Close talkers are very terrible and scary people.
Also, my second favorite episode is The Summer of George.
Oh, and Summer of George is very good.
And so my entire summer after graduating before grad school, my dad just kept saying Summer of Kate.
I love it.
There you go. kind of, as we mentioned before, kind of a bunch of famous people. Kind of want to talk about some of the famous guests that actually appeared that we may not remember. And then a little bit on the Seinfeld curse, which apparently was a thing. Some of these famous guests include Jon Favreau, Bryan Cranston, Courteney Cox, Brad Garrett, Orrin Graham, Terry Hatcher, Jeremy Piven, Denise Richard, James Spader, Patton Oswalt, Mark Skinsky.
Mariska Hargitay.
SVU lady.
Yes.
There you go.
Benson! Benson, for the people who don't know.
Ancient Benson.
The only person who remains on that show from the original cast. Oh, wait, no, Anne Ice-T.
Yeah. And to be fair, that's just like probably the most like notable ones, the list, and probably like some of the older people that we may not recognize and stuff that did a bunch of stuff were on there. Obviously, I can't remember the, obviously we had some famous guests. I can't remember the New York Met person that came on there that had the great episode. Obviously, Larry David ended up playing George Steinbrenner for a while, but obviously the reference to George Steinbrenner for a lot of the recurring shows was great, and whatnot else. But yeah, they had a lot of guests, they had a lot of people, and it was cool because it was weird because like Seinfeld obviously played himself, but then they would have some of these guests on and they would just play themselves.
Yes.
And so it was kind of like a weird, not saying, I don't know if it's ever been done before, obviously, but it's like a lot of times, you know, we have an actor come on, but no, they said a famous person, they would just come play themselves for like an episode. And that was about it. Obviously, then I want to talk about the Seinfeld curse. All these side characters, Julia, Lee Dreyfus, Elaine, obviously Michael Richards, and then Jason Alexander, they all tried to have careers afterwards in new shows. They had spinoff shows. They had everything, their own shows, other stuff, and they essentially did. They all bombed and maybe barely lasted at all. But then, obviously, for like good, like this, I mean, this was lasting for like a long time. Seinfeld ends in like 98, probably wrapping up filming. And obviously, it's not until about 2006 to 2010 where Elaine, Julia's show, The New Adventures of Old Christine, finally takes off for a good four seasons. And she actually wins a Primetime Emmy. And the funny thing about this is obviously it's just kind of thing, but she went, during her speech, she goes, I'm not somebody who really believes in curses, but curse this baby. And it's just kind of funny because like,
very powerful.
Yeah, it was just powerful, but it was just funny. Like, they didn't want to believe in it and we didn't say it, but like you could tell it was in people's heads, in their own heads at times.
Oh, yeah.
They heard it so many times for how many times.
And then she went on and did Veep, which was phenomenal. Yeah,
that's what I've been waiting to say. Veep. Like, Veep exists. She beat whatever curse was happening.
Well, she had to do The New Adventures of Old Christine first to get past it, and then now she's obviously been far enough to run. Because I do know Veep was...
She's just so funny. She's just a funny human.
Oh, very much so.
Which is still hilarious that it took still almost 10 years to actually get a show off the ground. Because she was in a bunch of other stuff and other shows before this.
Although I did a quick search and like Michael Richards did The Michael Richards Show, which when a comedian names their show after themselves, that's never a good show, or very rarely is that a good show.
And then he had his crazy breakdown and everything.
His racist breakdown.
Exactly. Yes.
But no, obviously Michael Richards, you know, obviously he didn't fail. I mean, like go on to do multiple shows like Jason Alexander and even some of the movies that Jason Alexander starred in that were very bad. But he didn't do anything else, that's for sure. Michael Richards.
I just like Jason Alexander because he just seems like a really good guy to have a beer with. Anytime I've ever seen him on a talk show or giving an interview, he's just such a nice person, which is crazy when you think of how crazy Costanza is.
That contrast is insane.
Yeah. So kind of, I guess, a little bit of, like, kind of fun facts, but kind of the last two are not really so much a fun fact, because I kind of want to talk a little bit. Despite being one of the most watched TV episodes ever, and as we talked about being the most hyped-up show, like, season three finale ever, pretty much to this day, everybody still hates the finale and are still pissed off about it.
My father can attest to this.
Yeah,
okay, so do we want to explain what the finale is?
Yes. Sure.
Go for it.
I mean, it's a character parade. It's a clip show for part one and a character parade for part two.
Yes.
Or no, sorry. Never mind. I got that wrong. Part one is them getting arrested. Part two is character witnesses against them. And that's where it turns into a clip show and a character parade.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's also, honestly, clip shows are risky in general and very rarely good. But what a wild idea to end your show with a clip show.
Yeah, it's usually like a mid-season type thing, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, yep. Unless you're Community, where you do a clip show, but none of the clips are actually from the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's honestly one of the most clever episodes
Community,
I've seen.
Another show that we wouldn't have without Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah. Not at all.
Also, if anybody's wondering what Jason Alexander's up to, he is Cy Borgman in the Harley Quinn TV series.
Nice.
But also it ends with them basically being in jail all because somebody had water in their ear and they couldn't get their plane. Do their TV show, and then ends with them just being in a jail cell arguing,
And having the exact same conversation that the show started with.
Yep. Obviously, Jerry Seinfeld to this day, obviously, done interviews and said that's basically only one of his only regrets was the finale, and they basically had other plans, and they actually thought about maybe possibly adding another little addition onto it at some point, yada yada yada. But obviously that didn't happen.
Have they said what the plans were for the finale?
Not really. From what I got gathered, was they kind of wanted to do something else on top of it and not just end it per se like that. But nothing, obviously, of concrete. And I kind of just, honestly, to be honest, it's kind of hard searching for it. Like, why now? And obviously, I know you screwed it up. But yeah, apparently, this was something that obviously still sits with him and sits with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. To where, like I said, if you ask anybody about Seinfeld at this point, it's, I love the show, I still hate that finale, and I still hate what they did. And that's basically
honestly, it almost would have been a better finale if the last episode was the first episode of the show that they pitched, and you can see that it's just not good and not going to pan out for them, and that's how it ends.
But yeah, it was, I don't know where they were going with it. I know when the first time I watched it, I was like, this isn't great, but not bad. But then it's like, and I watched it again later, and then obviously after I watched more, it's just kind of like, it hits you of like, this show was this good, and this is what we got. Like, what? And that's what Jerry Seinfeld had mentioned. Said, he goes, honestly, our show was super about little detailed stuff, and we tried to do big comedy, and obviously we failed at that.
Yeah. Because of,
you know, mall parking garage to try to make a clip show and bring everybody. And we didn't even mention, as I said, did I not put Soup Nazi on here? I did not. Okay.
You did not.
I think it's
and that's like, a whole other thing of like, didn't they get like sued or something about that?
Which obviously was another fun fact I had, which was Michael Costanza, Jerry's friend, whom James George is named after, basically filed a $100 million lawsuit claiming invasion of privacy and defamation to character. It was dismissed and thrown out. I think he wrote a whole book. He wrote a whole book of it called The Real George Costanza.
Wow.
So like, it's pretty bad. I don't know. It was weird. I get it, but I'm also like, who cares? Like, I don't know. The weird thing, obviously, we're talking about one more kind of quote unquote from back, as the show actually failed after that first thing and for the test pilot and test audiences. And it basically got leaked out. It's been leaked everywhere, essentially, of basically being too New York and too Jewish. And that was
that's a take.
Yeah, right? That's so bad.
That was the NBC thing. And so basically, if you ever find out like about the behind the scenes thing, Seinfeld is too New York and too Jewish. I have saw a few stuff looking up that basically some people did like the way they actually showed Jewish people in a positive light, even though it kind of like they kind of were per se like bad people, but it wasn't like, you know, a horrible thing. They're basically middle class people doing, you know, living in New York, but quote unquote.
Just living their life. That's all it was. Yeah, they were just existing.
Yeah. So yeah, obviously I'm not Jewish, so I can't speak on that from that perspective. So I don't know per se, but that was basically the huge thing of like what the, when they were talking about picking up that came out, and those four or five words show up every time with Seinfeld. Hello Newman that we brought up has actually only said 15 times throughout all 180 episodes.
I don't believe that.
That's what everybody said.
That's shockingly low.
And then Alex mentioned a little bit of this. NBC offered $100 million for a 10th season. Jerry turned it down. And for those who don't
know. Okay, I didn't know it was that much. I just knew that they had offered him money for a 10th season.
And that is $100 million in 1998.
Okay, so what's inflation due to that?
Oh gosh, I'd have to look that up. I didn't look it up.
I'm looking it up. Keep talking.
Okay. But so yeah, that obviously I could keep going and rattling off the fun facts. I think the other crazy one they had was the finale. People make the kind of the bad joke of it was the finale was so bad Frank Sinatra died because he died basically on the night of the release of the premiere of the season finale. Obviously, and I mean you can keep going on and on with a bunch of random stuff. I didn't look at both. Those were the kind of the most interesting ones I wanted to talk about. Obviously, I knew we were going to kind of be over time because this is, you know, I mean, I know it was only 10 years and it's been a long time, but it is a very popular show.
Yeah. Alex, it turns out it'd only be 153.89 million, but still. So
he would gain an additional $53 million. That's a.
Yeah.
I'll take
that's
the 0.8 and be happy.
Seriously.
But yeah, that was that was just for one season. One is just we're just gonna pick, you know, like a whole entire like few shows and whatnot for one season. That's about all I have. Obviously, we could keep going on with more episodes, more fun moments, more stuff. There's a lot. Like I said, if there was ever anything that was quote unquote memeable or anything else before memes even existed or catchphrases, it was pretty much this show. I pretty much have kind of, you know, I really like the show. I do understand some people I know don't like it, but obviously I don't think people understand you're younger, you know, you're probably offended by everything. But
oh, yeah, we didn't even get to the Seinfeld isn't funny thing, because that's like a whole trope. And really, just to go over that real quick, the whole idea of Seinfeld isn't funny is people now watching Seinfeld who had never seen it before and thinking this show's not funny. But what really is happening is that you're looking at the original, but you've seen so many copies that, like, it just seems like another copy and it's not good. And that goes back to earlier we were talking about, you have to judge this against the TV that it was going up against. And when you look at this type of storytelling, these types of jokes not happening at the time, it was hysterical and it was new. In the same way that, you know, in 10, 15 years, early episodes of It's Always Sunny are not going to really register.
Yep.
Yeah, because, I mean, I said, I've heard so many people talk about, well, about this show, and I'm like, yeah, this is literally a Seinfeld, like, ripoff, dude. Like, I know you think it's funny, but, like, I watched the original, like.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I don't agree with those people.
I love The League, but I've realized over the course of this conversation that The League is just Seinfeld.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, like, yeah, Jenny is kind of just Elaine.
Yes, that's all Jenny is. Jenny is Elaine. 100% Elaine.
Yeah, dang.
I love Jenny so much.
Yeah. So that's my kind of upset. My kind of talk this whole time about that. Do you all have any final thoughts here before we get out of here?
I just think, yes. Go for it.
Alex, you always go last because you usually have a soliloquy.
You're also
right.
No, I was just going to say, I like Elaine, and Elaine was a lie, and that I thought I could wear suits like her, and I can't. So, yeah. No, I really love Seinfeld. It, a lot of the times when my dad and I talk to each other, and we make the common comedy between us is Seinfeld. And that's something that I'm really thankful for, because my dad doesn't watch a lot of TV. My dad doesn't care about a lot of TV, but my dad loves Seinfeld. So if I ever need to make a reference to him, I can pull one out from Seinfeld, and it's something that is really great. And one of the things that I really love, too, is watching my parents make Seinfeld references to each other, because my dad will walk into your room and my mom will say, "Hello, Eric." And it's just one of the most adorable things, because it's their language too. And so watching people, like, in my life bond and then also with me, it's funny. And the funniest thing is my dad never tries to explain a Seinfeld joke to me. Every time my mom makes one to me, she has to tell me what episode it's from, as if I wasn't sitting on the couch with them when they watched it.
Incredible. I do love that.
Adrian, what do you got for us?
I mean, I'm going to give it a shot, but also, like, if I don't like it, I'm not going to tell y'all, because you're just going to tell me I don't get it, and I'm just going to be like, it's just not good. But I think I'll like it, but I don't know. Yeah. We'll see. Also, I rewatched Always Sunny, like, 2 months ago, and those 15-year-old episodes are still, they're still good. They still hold up.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know how they put some of that stuff on TV, but...
That's true. The very first episode alone, I'm like, I don't know how this got aired.
I don't know how that got aired, but it did. So I have faith that people will like Seinfeld, hopefully, like, in the future, if it's still, like, culturally relevant. But I'm glad y'all like it. I'm going to give it a shot if it's all on Hulu. I got that Hulu Plus. I'm going to watch commercials.
I will say, obviously, trying to give it a
I can put it on in the background.
I will say, obviously, trying to get it on as much as, like, not funny, is people don't realize that the time gap. Like, they do a whole episode on a telephone. People don't even have telephones. Like, there is quite a bit of stuff that gets outdated that you just wouldn't understand, possibly the struggle of a telephone or an answering machine, as you said before, of, like, the stuff is just, some kids remember we had an Apple commercial, people don't even know what a computer is. They buy a giant TV and it's like the most magical thing they've ever seen. And, like, people now buy, like, flat screen TVs that have, like, that I can play Netflix on, and they bought, like, this giant, like, big, like, 600-pound TV. And then for a wedding that fails, and they kept trying to take the wedding gift back because they broke up after they gave it to them. But but it was one of those of, and they were four people that went in on this. And, like, nowadays, like, this stuff just, it doesn't connect reasons as well.
Like, I think, Adrian, I don't know if you would like it, just because you've said on the podcast before that you don't like things about bad people, even when it's comedy. It's the reason you said you didn't like The Office or didn't care for The Office. But at the same time, I think that what Seinfeld does is it makes it so normal that you'll be able to find some sort of thread that you can actually appreciate from it versus, like, just something that's completely in left field.
I mean, I think just from the conversation, I think that's definitely like what'll happen. Because I don't like Friends, because when my wife was trying to like watch it for the first time, I was like, these people suck. Like, I forgot how much these people like are not cool people, and they try to like make them seem like they're not just these very bad people. And it doesn't seem like Seinfeld does that. So
yeah,
for sure.
I am excited to go watch it after this.
All right, Alex.
Well, I do want to say, no, before I go into anything about why Seinfeld matters, I do want to acknowledge that there are some episodes that have aged really poorly and that were even controversial when they happened.
Yes.
And I don't endorse those episodes or what they do. And I don't think any of you guys do. Specifically, there's the one with the Native American statue, and there's the Puerto Rican Pride Parade.
Yes.
Which ends with Michael Richards setting a flag on fire, if you want to know how bad it goes.
Really bad.
And I think they actually like issued an apology. NBC did, I think, like basically right after it aired, more or less. It was not well received, and it did not deserve to be well received.
It was really bad. The stakeout's also a bad one. And
what happens with the stakeout one?
The stakeout one, if I remember correctly, the stakeout is where they go to a dinner party to meet a woman. And he wants to get her phone number, and Elaine's helping, is it Jerry? I think he's with Jerry. Yeah, she's with Jerry. Mm-hmm. And essentially, they're just, like, stalking this woman.
Oh, yeah, that's not good.
So that he can sleep with her. It's really kind of, it's really cringy and uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. That one's really bad. And I think outside of that, I think the Puerto Rican Pride Parade is, or Puerto Rican Day Parade is the one that, like,
that's, like, the worst the one.
Yeah, that one by far. That one's by far
it's
the worst.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, I think, honestly, if I think about why Seinfeld matters, it's because of the impact it had on the comedy landscape. This is, like, comedy is something that I personally place a high value on. Like, if there's ever awkward situations or tense situations, like, I am the person who will come in with a joke and try to fix things. Like, my parents' kitchen caught fire when I was in college, and, like, as soon as the fire department showed up, I, like, made a couple jokes and then left to get everybody coffee. Like, that's who I am. Seeing a show that, like, kind of lifted some restraints and opened the doors for people to try new things and to adventure out into different kinds of joke telling and to make those things more mainstream, and just its cultural contributions in general with all the terms that we talked about, what a uniting factor it was for, like, the, not just, like, on a family level with Kate, but, like, also on a national level, like, showing the finale in Times Square. I think that it had a very weird defining power over the 90s and over comedy that we're still seeing now 20 years after it ended. And so, yeah, I think just the sheer impact that it had and the way that it has opened up new avenues of making jokes, like, that's what I appreciate about Seinfeld and why I think it matters.
Awesome.
Yeah. Did I meet your standard, your expectations of me?
Yes.
Always.
As always.
Glad to hear.
I don't know. I thought it was kind of mundane and normal.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, this was fun. Alex, thanks again for coming. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Always a pleasure to be here.
I like Seinfeld. I still do. I haven't watched it in a few years. Obviously, I know with the rights transitioning, and I just don't. I'm sorry. I won't do commercials. This might be a whole. We've been through this whole thing. I might have a whole episode of why I will not watch Hulu because of commercials, and it drives me insane. Even if they're so bad, like, I didn't pay for Hulu for that. But anyways. I don't know. It's something. It's unique. Like I said, people may not get it nowadays. Younger people, it was a different time. Obviously, 30 years. It's very thing. I do like the whole. I like the bad character stuff per se, because obviously I don't like. Obviously, I love The Office and everything. But I also just like Seinfeld because it does ground in a level of, like, I just don't think people in general are probably that as good as they think they are. And a lot of people are probably more close to the Seinfeld characters than they probably really think they are. And so, like, it obviously we don't get to Always Sunny in Philadelphia level or even The Office level where, you know, you can genuinely, there is a giant step upward. I think Seinfeld, for obviously, you know, being the infant or the beginner thing, but I think it does a great job of saying people are flawed. People can be bad. But in the general, they just try to live their lives. And so I guess on that, Kate, take us away.
Yeah. Alex, thank you so much for coming on. Mm-hmm. This was great. You made me seem less weird. As always. But why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at mostalwaysalex. I don't post nearly as much as I should, but I do want to get better about that. You can find me on Frightday.com. We do genre and horror news and reviews. Also, once a month on their Patreon, we do a free episode for anybody called The Writer's Room, which is usually a train wreck, but I lead it, so it's my train wreck. And you can find me on Game Boys, which is a co-op video gaming podcast.
Awesome. And if you're listening and you want to support us a little bit more, head on over to patreon.com/butwhythoughpc. And you can follow us on all of our social medias at butwhythoughpc. And come follow me at omimithrandir on Twitter. Adrian?
Yep. You can find me on Twitter at superreese93, SUPERRUSE93.
Matt?
I still can't believe he wanted to name a child Seven and then got mad that somebody stole it. Nobody was married.